You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, hello and welcome to the cycling podcast Femina, and happy new year, if that's still in any way appropriate to say at this, when we're kind of nudging on to February now. My name is Rose Manley, and yes, we return for another fantastic season of women's racing, and I am, as always, joined by Denny Gray of the British Continental. Hello, Denny.
Hello, Rose. How are you doing?
I'm very well. I'm just wondering, I'm glad that you're back, Denny, because after that bit of furore, wasn't there, at the end of in December on our Christmas quiz episode, and I wasn't sure that you were ever going to come back on the podcast after what was quite a controversial quiz finish, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm completely over it, Rose.
No, I didn't think you were.
Probably won't be for some time.
No. No.
I did manage to have a lovely Christmas, but at the back of my mind, that damning defeat, the result, I mean, that result was just a travesty, really, wasn't it?
Well, it was more of a travesty than we realised, because after we'd finished recording and we left the pub, we suddenly realised that I'd just done the maths wrong. And actually, you should have still probably won. But anyway, we'll put that aside for now, particularly as we're joined by former Olympic champ Jo Rousell. Lovely to have you back, Jo.
Thank you for having me back. Very nice to join you again.
And I'm glad that you're, you know, not that we've got rid of Rebecca Charlton because of that, or, you know, the awkward Christmas quiz. We obviously lovely to have you back, Jo. And you've got some lovely news that I'm hoping you're going to share with all the podcast listeners.
So expecting a baby last week of April. And it's funny because last time I saw you, Rose, you were very, very close to your due date.
Yes.
And at that point, I knew I was pregnant, but hadn't told anybody because I'd not had the first scan yet. And I remember you being like super relaxed, like, yeah, baby's due next week, maybe the week after, I'm sure it'll be fine. And I was asking you quite a few questions, and I was trying not to like be obvious, but also sort of like really like, how are you going to get to the hospital? And really sort of simple things like that.
I was probably thinking, God, Joe's really doesn't trust me to get this baby out. Have you really thought about how to get to hospital?
Yeah, well, you mentioned that you walked in with your first one. And,
I did, because
me and my partner don't have a car. I was thinking that, well, that's probably going to be me, and actually is that doable, and realistically, like, how far am I going to be able to walk at that, you know, fully at full term? And yes, I had all sorts of burning questions that I didn't quite feel like I could properly ask.
I'm surprised that we didn't get Google Maps out to kind of work out the distance from my house to the hospital and your house to the hospital, and how far you can run. But well, congratulations, Jo. That's lovely. Lovely news, and we're very excited for you. There's babies popping off everywhere, isn't there? Because obviously I've had one. Rebecca Charlton is her one, will be due any time now. And then Jo, you've got another one. So Denny, come on, get on it.
I think two is where we're going to stop. But you never know.
Surprises
happen, don't they?
There's something in the water here at the Cycling Podcast.
Clearly.
Well, that'll be obviously a very exciting 2025 for you, Jo. And that is kind of our theme for the episode, actually, isn't it? We're going to have a little feature later on, talking to some riders, sending some voice memos in about what they're looking forward to this year in a racing perspective, and also giving us their New Year's resolutions. Any New Year's resolutions from you two that are mentionable?
You know,
I guess
to really love New Year's resolutions, and I used to get very excited about picking one out and planning for it. But
I did,
but I always fail at them. Oh. So this year my resolution was to have none.
To have no resolutions.
Yes, I've just given up on resolutions.
Yes, I don't. Mine was to cut down my time just kind of doom scrolling, but I think that's kind of almost everybody's ambition, is to cut down on that a bit, and also to fold my clothes while I take them off, because normally I lump them at the end of the bed. So, but that's really a kindness to my husband, actually, to fold them and put them away or put them in the washing and not just to leave them on a chair. That's my resolution. Well, we'll hear what the riders, hopefully some slightly more thrilling ones than folding clothes. Yeah, or not having any at all.
Yes.
But the racing has actually begun already, unbelievably. We've had the first Women's World Tour race of the year is done and dusted, which seems kind of crazy. The Tour Down Under, that was a three-stage race won by Noemi Rugg, who kind of actually came to our attention, didn't she, last year at the Olympics. She finished, I think, seventh there, and she was kind of in that really elite group of riders. She was a Swiss rider rider. And she an incredible performance there. So it's great to see her push on. But Joe, what was your kind of big takeaway from that race?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of things, but for me, I was really looking forward to how the peloton's going to look with so many big transfers this year. I know every season there's always transfer, there's always big names moving teams, but it was really hard for me to get my head around some particular names moving teams. So seeing Nee Fisher Black in Lidl Trek kit just seemed really strange when he's been wearing SD Works kit for so long. Seeing Elise Chappé in FDG Suez kit and not with Canyon SRAM anymore. So there was, I think I was really intrigued, how is the racing going to look with some really quite key players on completely different teams? But then I guess my takeaway is that we still saw Nee Fisher Black doing similar things, pacing on climbs, climbing really well. We still saw Elise Chappé going on her trademark attacking moves. And so in a way I was like, perhaps it's not as different as I thought it was going to be. Obviously, there were some big teams not there, some big names not there. But yeah, my big takeaway was that every rider is still the same rider. And whilst I thought this is going to really mix things up, they still obviously race the same way largely. So yeah, whilst it was confusing me whilst watching it, I was like, I cannot get my head around this person in this kit. I need to really pay attention here. Still, in a lot of ways, the racing was quite similar in style to what we've seen before.
And you're a commentator, Joe, so that's also probably going to give you a bit of nerves about what on earth is that?
Well, my worst one, who obviously wasn't racing this weekend, is Alyssa Longo Borghini. And I'm just very glad that she's Italian national champion, because I think seeing her not in Lidl Trek kit is going to be very confusing for me, because she is, in my head, Lidl Trek or Trek Segafredo before that. She was part of that team from the start. So I'm very glad that Alyssa is going to be in the Tricolore national champion jersey for Italy and not in a UAE team ADQ kit, because I think I would get very confused trying to spot her in that.
And you have to add to that also the new jerseys anyway. I mean, even if you've been at the same team for, you know, 10 years, you know, new colours, the jerseys change, I think, a lot more on the women's side than they do in the men's. And sometimes they all end up just looking like the same jersey, don't they, to be honest? But it's interesting to see that, get that first sight of the riders and seeing how they are all performing. Denny, what was your kind of big takeaway?
It's always difficult what to read into the Tour Down Under, isn't it? Because most of the big riders weren't there, let's face it. SD Works weren't there, full stop. But I think it will give, for me, it's a race that's going to give a small number of riders a huge confidence boost going into 2025. Naomi Rook is obviously one of those. She's, as you say, she's a rider that had a really good season when you look at results in 2024, not just the Olympic road race. She was Swiss national champion. She won a race early in Spain and had really consistent results throughout the year. But she always said that she really lacked confidence. And coming out of that, winning that race, she said that's, you know, has given her a huge confidence boost. Kim Kadsow said when she trains with her, you know, she just cannot keep up, basically. And she always felt that confidence was the thing that was lacking for her. So I think that's, you know, a set of confidence for Naomi Rook, but also Chloe Dygert. She had what she described as a tricky 2024.
It's just funny when you've won an Olympic gold medal.
I know.
To say that.
I know. I mean, she's.
I felt really inadequate hearing some of her quotes, but that is what she's like.
Yeah, she's got incredibly high expectations of herself, doesn't she? I mean, she was saying that she looks back on her Yorkshire time trial win in 2019 at the Worlds, and even though she won by 1.5 minutes, she still looks back and thinks about things she could have done better. And she says she's never satisfied, and you know, even when she wins, she's trying to figure out how to be better. But she did say that she hoped, even though she did have a very good 2024 by most people's standards, that 2025 will be a comeback year for her. And she did look really strong, didn't she? I mean, again, I know she didn't have perhaps some of the bigger rivals she'll have later in the year, but that win she had on stage three, where she just rode everybody off her wheel in that sprint finish, and it was just astonishing the way she did it. It was kind of Lorena Rebus like, wasn't it, the way she did it? So I think that bodes well for a rider like her. And then there are riders like Silke Smulders, who another youngish rider, Dutch rider. She came second overall, so she'll take great confidence. So I think it's one of those races where you definitely doesn't give you too many clues as to who's going to win the bigger races in the year, but I think it does give you some kind of indications about riders that were at least had a good winter.
I think, Joe, you know, as an athlete yourself, how much confidence can you take if you feel like you have won a world tour race, but you know, not all of the best rivals are there. I'm just thinking that, you know, last year we thought that it would be a really big breakthrough for Sarah Gigante, didn't we? She won the Tour Down Under last year. And we kind of thought this was going to be the platform on which she was going to have a stellar year. And I mean, she did have a steady year. She kind of came seventh on GC at the Tour de France, and eighth on the Alpe d'Huez stage, which is great. But obviously the fact that I definitely looked that up. I didn't remember. I definitely didn't remember. I mean, we were there and I didn't remember Sarah Gigante featuring particularly, or, you know, even thinking that she was going for top five on GC or anything like that. So, you know, can we say that this is a good confidence booster, or does it tell us, how much does it really tell us about form and confidence and where these riders might be this year?
Good question. I think in terms of confidence boost, it's always going to be a confidence boost to win a race of any kind, whether that's a national level race, a UCI race or a World Tour race. We often say in cycling, winning's a habit. So you can do all the correct training, you can be on the form of your life, but if you haven't got that confidence to make those moves when it matters in a race, go on that attack when your legs hurt, but you know everyone else is going to be hurting, like those little decisions, those split second decisions are so important. So I think the confidence gained from any bike race win is always going to be huge. It does give you confidence as well that your winter training has worked. It's always that weird unknown period where you're away from the racing, you're away from your teammates. You know, some people choose to go to the warmer climates to train. I know there's been a lot of pros out in Australia for an extended amount of time, and I don't blame them at all, like escaping the European winter. Yeah. But no, I do think it's a huge confidence boost. But when you do compare it to the European races, it is a little bit different. And I think we just need to accept that we haven't got all the big names there, but a win is a win. And you can still take so much confidence individually from that. And it also takes the pressure off your team and your teammates. Like, you've got that first win in the bag, especially if any riders that have changed teams as well. So Danik Hangerfelt as well at Sarah Tizzet, getting the win for them, opening race of the season. Like, that gives everybody else in the team a huge confidence boost and just takes a tiny bit of pressure off the shoulders. And you've not got that, when are we going to get the first win? You have now got three teams that can say, we've got our first win of the season and it's a World Tour win. So whatever happens over the next month or so, it's already a strong start to the season.
We saw on stage two, I mean, although Naomi Rogge wasn't up against the elite of women's cycling, it was actually Neve Fisher-Black and Neve Bradbury who were kind of leading up Willunga Hill initially. I mean, two excellent climbers. And Naomi Rogge kind of dug in, clawed her way back. And you could say they had the rug pulled from under them. But anyway,
you could say that.
I did say
you might want to choose
I
not
may
to
regret but, yeah. ever saying that. But yeah, I think it was also a boost for her team as well. I mean if we had any doubt that EF Education Oatly are kind of a world tour standard team, then I think that should be removed now. I mean, they're well up there in the rankings, and of course at the end of this year there'll be another set of promotion and relegation, and they look odds on now to be promoted to the World Tour. And they already had an excellent 2024. So I think as a team, they'll be taking great confidence from that performance.
Yeah, and as a team taking, you know, confidence, we should talk a little bit more about Danik Hengeveld and her win for Sarah Tizzet WNT, because that was, she won the first stage, a solo move, and it kind of seemed a little bit like just no one was interested in chasing her until far too late. And then, you know, she was already gone and across the finish line, wasn't she? I mean, she's just come to Sarah Tizzet WNT, and we were really worried, weren't we, when we were doing the transfer episode about what are Sarah Tizzet WNT doing. They had, I think, eight riders left the team and seven riders came in this season. So a huge change for their team. They're, you know, totally different look to last year. Last year, they had to wait until the Tour de France Femme for that great Cedrine Cabau win to have their first Women's World Tour win of the season. That was last year. So to come and very first opportunity to get stage one, to put in a bit of a gutsy move, and then for Danik Hengeveld to hang on. That is worse. I've done well.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you for putting in an awful pun just to overshadow mine.
She, you know, she did hold on there and came away with the victory, which, you know, it's going to be particularly big for a team like that, isn't it, to get a win like that?
Yeah, and I think, like you say, it's the number of transfers in and out, like quite how different the team looks. That's a whole new group of people to gel together, which in some ways can be a good thing as opposed to an individual coming into a well-established team. You've got so many changes there. It really is a fresh start for a lot of people, probably for the staff as well. So the confidence that would have given them to have, again, got that first win in the bag so early, first bike race of 2025, and then for her individually as well, just have being brave enough to make that move. And it's a really tricky one because the odds are so stacked against you. You've got all those teams, you've got plenty of good sprinters in the race, you've got so many Aussie riders as well that are going to want a win, or Aussie team that are going to want a win here at the Tour Down Under. So to make that move and to hang on was so impressive, that the confidence it took to do that. And yeah, I think, you know, for Sarah Tizzet, well done them, you know, completely new look team. And yeah, put any doubts to bed really about how their 2025 season might look. You know, whatever happens now, they've got a world tour win in the bag, which is brilliant.
I did wonder if it was maybe an indication about how this season might actually go, because, you know, we have this kind of, we've talked a lot about kind of the spreading of the talent across a lot of teams, as opposed to them all being at SD Works or Lidl Trek. They're kind of spread among lots of teams. You know, maybe the fact that the talent is spread out and, you know, not the teams aren't all looking at one or two big teams to do the majority of the work. Maybe we will have more wins from smaller teams, or more wins from riders that we're not expecting to maybe go somewhere and win, because of the fact that it's kind of broken up the usual traditions and processes involved in a bike race a little bit, hasn't it? It's like, you know, there's so many different winners and they all come from different teams. Who's going to do the chasing and who isn't? It might be quite favourable to a breakaway move like Hengeveld's was.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said in a previous episode, it's a bit like we've thrown all the cards up in the air and we're still waiting really to see how they've landed this season with all the transfers that have happened. And it was interesting actually talking about that stage win on stage one. I mean, I think some of the teams came in for criticism because there were a lot of sprinters there and that was their only chance to win something at that race. And people were asking why didn't they chase more cohesively. But I think one of the DSs said in a comment that essentially they didn't really know where the form was, they kind of didn't really know what the pecking order was this year. And I think maybe we'll see quite a lot of that certainly in the earlier races, and maybe even into the spring classics, as the teams start to kind of eye each other up and work out who is now the strongest team. It won't all be down to SD Works to, well, not that they ever did, but to chase down their rivals. But yeah, it introduces a completely new dynamic. So it's not just a case of who the strongest teams are, but it's also a case of who the other teams think the strongest teams are, and therefore who should do the chasing. So I think that will shake things up quite a bit, you know, apart from the fact that we then have, yeah, as you say, kind of a really interesting GC matchup for some of the later races.
I did also think it was really interesting seeing Nee Fisher-Black, another one of those kind of riders, like, you know, you've always been an SD Works rider, what are you doing? You're now at Lidl Trek and that's so confusing. But seeing her and Amanda Spratt working very well together on that Willunga Hill second stage, kind of already seeing that teamwork in action, wasn't it? Which is, you know, she's new to the team. Amanda Spratt's been there for a few years now. Good to see that they're kind of straight away trying to put in place some of the kind of dynamics that we're going to see for the rest of the season.
Yeah, exactly that. So like I mentioned earlier about Nee Fisher-Black, we know what a strong climber she is, and she did just slot in perfectly there to working with Amanda Spratt. And it was, you know, very reminiscent of jobs that we've seen her do before for SD Works, but completely different team. And it's quite exciting how they're going to work this year, Lidl Trek, with again, so many changes, so many big names sort of coming and going. And I'm looking forward to particularly their climbing team now, because we know how talented Nee Fisher-Black is, and I'm looking forward to seeing what opportunities she might get as an individual there, which is always a tough question when you're on any world tour team, but Lidl Trek's one of the biggest ones with so many big names in it.
And there aren't many other kind of champion. I mean, Lizzie Dynan's still there, but kind of retiring at the end of the year. Elisa Longo Borghini's gone, there, it's not like you can hide behind other champions here.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit more of a transitional year for them, I think. And while, as you say, they've got some big names. They've got Ellen van Dijk there, they've got Lizzie Deignan, you know, huge names in the world of women's cycling, but riders that are towards the end of their career, it's fair to say. I mean, Lizzie's announced that. I think I'm doing anybody a disservice but by saying that. But Nee Fisher-Black's still relatively young, still up and coming in many ways, so I'm looking forward to seeing how she can develop there and hopefully embrace any opportunities that she gets in that situation.
She definitely was embracing it. I did wonder if it showed a little bit of her inexperience there. Obviously it's so hard to tell, and it's particularly hard to tell when it's so early in the season. You really don't know what everyone's form is, but seeing her on stage two, she really, something that we like to see, you know, going on the front foot. And you know, she was one of the key riders that was whittling down the rest of the peloton behind on that Willunga hill, the two ascents of that. But it was interesting to see she kind of, I don't want to say blew up at the end, but you know, she was in a really prime position, and it must have been within like the last kilometer that she lost a huge amount of ground. And we saw Noemi Rugg go and Silke Smulders come second. And you would have thought on paper you would have seen Nee Fisher-Black in the top three there at least, wouldn't you?
You would have, yeah. I wasn't sure what the team tactics were there, because on the first ascent of Willunga Hill, as you say, she led there and kind of really decimated the peloton behind. And I assumed that she was therefore working for Amanda Spratt, and that was the plan. But then on the second ascent, she seemed to be, again, the stronger of the two. She was in the lead group. She basically dropped everybody bar Bradbury at one point. But yeah, as you say, she kind of ran out of steam. So you kind of think, well, maybe if she hadn't have done that effort on the first ascent, would she have had more in the bag? She reminded me, the way she was riding, she reminded me of Damien Vollering in the Spanish races last year, where she would just be on the front and just kind of motor away and just try to leave everyone in her wake. Fisher-Black didn't quite achieve,
but without the motoring, that, yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, didn't achieve the win. But I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure Lidl Trek won't be too worried about this. This is an early season race, and she's a rider of great talent, and hopefully, as Joe was saying, you know, we'll see her come good later on in the in the year when some of the bigger races come round.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, and this is Lionel here to tell you that this episode of the cycling podcast Femenin is sponsored by NordVPN. I've been using NordVPN for years now, as regular listeners will probably know, and I've renewed for another couple of years because NordVPN is the virtual private network that convinced me of the need to look after my online security, especially when I'm traveling. Now, for me, security is the primary reason for using NordVPN, because I know that it protects me from internet viruses, malicious malware, and phishing websites. And it works everywhere, whether you're at home or on the move, and you can protect up to 10 devices now with NordVPN. So I know that whenever I'm online, I know that it's keeping all of my important data safe, such as bank details and passwords. Now, primarily, it's the security aspect that I initially signed up to NordVPN for, such as connecting to hotel Wi-Fi, or as I was the other day, connecting my laptop up to my phone's connection. And I was safe in the knowledge, with NordVPN switched on, that all of my connections and my data were safe. No one else could log on or hijack any of those important details. There are other benefits too. You can switch your virtual location so that you can watch your favorite sports or streaming services when you're abroad, even if they're not available in that country. And it's really fast too, no buffering or lagging while you've got it switched on. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/TCP. Our link will give you an extra 4 months on a 2-year plan, and there's no risk either with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. We'll put that link in the podcast episode description notes, but go to nordvpn.com/TCP today.
Did you know you can save up to 70% on the best brands just by shopping at FromRebel.com? We're talking about strollers, car seats, high chairs, espresso machines, cookware, everything you need for way less. Here's how it works. Every single day, Rebel drops thousands of new products on the site for up to 70% off. It is a constant stream of endless deals from top brands like Upa Baby, Nuna, Baby Bjorn, Breville, Nespresso, KitchenAid, Le Creuset, and more. But you have to act fast, because every deal is one of a kind. So if you see something you love, make sure you add to cart fast.
So stop paying full price when you don't have to. Whether it's baby gear, kitchen upgrades, or a treasure for your home you didn't know you needed, Rebel has it for way less, up to 70% less. Shop from Rebel.com and save big.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Well, now it's time for our mini feature for the January episode. And that is basically I sent out a load of, you know, messenger pigeons to all of the teams and said, please go and ask your riders what they expect from this year, or not what they expect, but what they're looking forward to the most about this year. Obviously, huge amount of changing teams is that we've spoken about a lot, but a few calendar changes as well, which might throw up some interesting answers. So, yes, I asked a lot of riders from a lot of different teams about what their expectation of the year was and if they had any New Year's resolutions. So let's listen to that.
Elisa Balsamo, Little Trek.
I'm really looking forward to race the first women Milan San Remo, and I can't wait. Yes, I want to stay less on the phone and watch less Instagram and all the social media.
Abby Smith, Team Picnic Post NL.
This season, I'm most looking forward to La Vuelta. I had my first proper go at it last year and really enjoyed it. It was hard, but I found myself getting stronger throughout the race and having a go at some breakaways and, you know, helping our GC leader do her best at the time. So, yeah, I'd be looking forward to that and giving it another go, really. It went well, and yeah, it was great fun racing on the Spanish roads. I love racing in Spain, so yeah, it'd be great to go back. And yeah, I've got it as a big target for me, so fingers crossed that yeah, I'll have a good one in May. I sort of have a New Year's resolution. I've had a few difficult years, I would say. I've started writing down just some positive things and positive affirmations that have happened kind of throughout each day. So yeah, each day just writing down just a very short something, just something good that's happened during the day, just to keep morale up and motivation high even when times are tough, and just to look back on as well and keep momentum and keep hope, really, even when things are tough. So yeah, I'm just writing a little something down, which seems to be helping so far.
Letizia Paternoster, Livaloo Lejaco.
So this year I'm really looking for to have a really great season. I really believe in it, and I have a really big goals for first for all the classics. So my big goal for sure is first Milano Sanremo, and then all the other races like Dos van Vlaanderen, Flandering. And I hope to have a good improve this year. And yeah, I'm working well on the winter season, so I'm really happy. My New Year's resolution for sure is remember every morning to be grateful for every good thing that I have in my life, and don't forget my smiling every day.
Shirin Van Anroy, Little Trek.
For me, it will be to finally be back racing again after having surgery and injury on my artery. I think I'll just be super excited to even be on the start line again and feel like the best version of myself again. And then I don't know when, but I just hope it will be somewhere soon. I try to say to myself that I need to be kind to myself this year and not put too much pressure on myself. So I hope I can keep that promise.
Maggie Coles-Lister, Human Powered Health.
I'm really, really looking forward to the classic season this year, and in particular, races like Flanders, Ghent, and Roubaix. I'm really excited to see what I can do for the team, because I've seen a steady increase in my ability and what I've done at those races over the past couple of years. And I'm also really excited to work with riders like Talita and Daria at those races. So yeah, new to the squad, excited to see what I can do. As for New Year's resolutions, I guess this is kind of one that I've made with my sports psych, but I really want to just take my time with things and do things slow, other than race my bike, of course. But everything else in life, just, you know, slow down. There's so much travel and like hustle all the time. So really just want to relax a little bit more, you know, settle my nervous system in the small moments and just take my time with doing things.
Elisa Longo Borghini, UAE ADQ.
This season, I'm looking forward to be racing with a new team and to have a new experience with in a new environment. But also I'm really looking forward to riding the Giro Women, which has for me interesting stages. I think we can have a very solid team for this kind of stage race, and we can go either for the GC or for a stage win. I'm also really looking forward to be the best version of myself. I don't really picked some resolutions for 2025, but I would really like to improve as a rider and grow as a person and to become my better self or my best self. But I truly believe that every year you can improve a little bit. So let's say my better self.
Francesca Barale, Team Picnic Post NL.
Yeah, I think what I'm looking most forward to is probably going to be classic season and especially Sanremo, because yeah, I'm curious to see how that's going to play out in the women's peloton and how the race is going to go. And yeah, as an Italian, I always like to race in Italy, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I have some new year resolution cycling related, which is probably do more stretching, because I'm a lazy girl sometimes and I don't do it. And then not cycling related, it's actually really more boost, because yeah, I always say I want to, but yeah, then I never do. So yeah, probably reading more books when I'm not busy with the season.
Rihanna Marcus, Little Trek.
Of course, I'm really looking forward to start racing with a new team. I'm super motivated to show myself, and it's also a bit like nervous for, like, I'm a little bit nervous to start the season again because I'm in a complete new environment. But I'm looking forward to prove myself in the team, and I hope to have many good races together. I guess like having enough time for family and friends is always a good idea. So. Be like focused when necessary, but especially like step back when it's good to have some family time.
Talita de Jong, Human Powered Health.
I'm looking forward to upcoming season, like racing with a new team, especially with good level riders, having a strong tactic as a team to reach out to the highest goal. So that's something that I really like, racing as a team and not on my own. So I'm looking forward to that. Of course, at cycling, some really big goals, of course, for winning a really big race one. Not only the podium, but I think the win that counts. And next to the bike, I think also we have a really nice family, staying healthy, be loved with my loved ones.
Megan Jastrab, Team Picnic Post NL.
For this year, I'm looking most forward to racing the first ever women's Sanremo race. I was fortunate enough to be selected, and I'm really looking forward to being a part of the race. I've watched the men's race several times on TV, so to be a part of the first ever women's race is really exciting, and I hope I have some good legs. And yeah, it goes in the favor of our team. One of my top goals this year would be to win a World Tour race. I have had a few podiums and lost the top fives in the past, and this winter has been pretty smooth for me without injuries, so hopefully that'll set me up for some time during the season. And yeah, would love to win a World Tour race, and that would be, I don't know if that's a New Year's resolution, but that's definitely a goal of mine for this year.
Well, plenty of things to look forward to this year, according to the riders. Blame them. Don't blame us. But one of the things that we got mentioned there, Lisa Balsamo mentioned it, among others, that Milan San Remo is back. And I say back because there was a Milan San Remo-esque race for the women called the Primavera Rosa back from 1999 to 2005. And that's back this year. It's back on the calendar. We've had Trofeo Binda, which has, you know, long time been on the calendar, has moved its week. And we've got Milan San Remo back. So a new monument. I mean, well, we'll have probably have this argument about whether something can be a monument when it just sidles in so late in the day. Don't know too much about it. We think that the race won't start in Milan anyway, but might start in Geneva and should include the Poggio and the Cipressa, which is only, in my opinion, the only good bit of that race. But we will, in the coming months, I'm sure, have more of a debate on this. And just another couple of calendar changes. There's no more Ronde van Drenthe, which actually surprised me because I hadn't noticed that that had been officially disbanded. Really sad to see that race go. It was ended up kind of being a sprinter's race towards the end of its life, but originally was a slightly more for a punchier rider, a race in the northern part of the Netherlands going over the Vanberg. We've seen the likes of Marianne Vos and Lorena Wiebes win that. That's gone, unfortunately, just because of, we've spoken about it a lot, about the cost of the running it, police support needed, that wasn't kind of forthcoming, and no Ride London Classic on the calendar either, which we've already mentioned, the UCI moving the date of that to a time when it was just not tenable to be held. And another new race, which I really know nothing about, and that's the Copenhagen Sprint, which is a men's and women's race at the end of June. I can only assume is a sprint in Copenhagen. That would be my best guess. That's a few of the little calendar shuffles that will be coming up this season. But Denny, you actually, I'm putting this on you already, set us just mere hours ago the challenge of coming up with some bold predictions. You did specifically say bold, it will,
yes,
be said.
I did.
Bold,
I did.
Predictions.
Yes.
For this season, which I was actually just saying that some of my predictions are like just a word selection machine where, you know, it's gone and selected a rider and selected a race and selected win or crash or, you know, whatever, run naked through it. Or I'm going to throw to you straight away, Denny, for your bold prediction for 2025, because I don't want to go first, for sure.
The pressure's on. It's just caveat that, you know, I guess the term bold is a bit like beauty, you know, it's in the eye of the beholder. So if my predictions aren't deemed bold enough, then I can only apologize. But I've got three predictions.
I think you've got more than three.
Well, I could make more if you want me to, but I'm just aware.
Is that, we're getting that word selector back out again,
may not
though,
want
aren't
to
we?
Listen to them all. But I guess number one is I will say that Neo Pro Kat Ferguson will win a world tour, women's world tour race in her first year, full year of racing. I think she's already got two professional wins as a junior. Let's not forget when she was a stagiaire last season at Movistar. And I think if anyone can do that, then Kat Ferguson can. She's just so enormously talented. I know we shouldn't try to overhype these young riders, but I do think she's got what it takes, both from her talent but also just her maturity, and I think she's grounded enough, and I think she has the backing of her team, so I think she could get that first world tour win in her first year of racing.
Will she have a bit of difficulty, because she did win Bain Chimay, didn't she, last year, which is quite a, you know, it's not a world tour race but it is quite a major race. Does that mean that there might be a bit of a more of a target on her back than some other junior riders that might be able to, you know, if you see Kat Ferguson go, might you be a bit more like, can't let her go? Whereas if you had a real unknown, you know, is her wins that she's got already maybe might stop her from, well, obviously there's no point in me arguing with this because this was your prediction.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be that will be a problem for her, won't it? I think, but that win, I think, showed her. I mean, that was a kind of reduced group sprint basically, and when she beat people like Charlotte Kuhl, amongst others. I think that's also the kind of environment where somebody like Leanna Lippert, her teammate, could win. And I think that maybe that will work to her advantage potentially. So I agree, you know, she will perhaps have more of a target on her back than perhaps other first years, but that doesn't mean to say she can't do it. I mean, also, let's look at the Tour Down Under, even the Chinese races towards the end of the year. You know, there were kind of a huge range of races in which she could get this World Tour win. So she doesn't necessarily have to be up against the best, but it'll still be a big, big win for an EoPro.
And also Movistar, not a team that has loads of kind of established, well, you might have established stars on it, but not necessarily established winners that, you know, they must be the leader in that race and they must be, that have kind of this divine right to be the leader on certain races. So, yeah, what do you think, Joe, on that one? Are we saying that, you know, well, is it bold or is it likely? I guess is the two ends of the spectrum.
I think it's likely. I think being bold would be picking the race she's going to win.
Right.
Without putting too much pressure on an 18-year-old, I might just add that. I think she's set a very high standard. I think she's always going to have a target on her back, being so dominant as a junior, winning multiple world titles, road and track. We know that cycling in the men's and women's peloton, the champions seem to be getting younger and older simultaneously, but we know so many riders are making that transition on both sides of the sport from junior to senior really quickly now. I obviously really hope for her sake that her career has longevity. She's got the right people behind her and the right people advising her. But I think absolutely. I mean, she's beaten Charlotte Kuhl, who's one of the best sprinters in the world, towards the end of last season. I do remember watching that sprint. Kuhl had a slight mechanical issue. So there's always that caveat, which again, I think will play into her favour, into Kat Ferguson's favour, because there might be other riders that have seen that. I think, that's why she won that. She's not as big a threat as we might think. But I think really exciting for Movistar to have such a strong sprint talent. And I'm really excited. I completely agree with you, Denny.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Good one. Okay, Joe, go on then. Give us one of yours for us to rip apart.
One of my bold predictions, which I've really overthought this, which way I'm going to go here, but I'm going to go with Anna van der Breggen making her comeback, and her comeback is going to be a huge success, and she is going to dominate in the Grand Tours.
Oh, but now Joe's not picking any races.
What does dominate mean, and what does huge success mean? I think we need to get some definitions.
Yeah, here. Okay, so dominate means win. Okay, win a Grand Tour. There you go. I've got off the fence there.
It's interesting, Joe, because obviously when Denny set us this challenge mere hours ago, I should stress, I was thinking, well, surely I've got to do a prediction around Anna van der Breggen. I just couldn't work out which way I was going to go with it. I really couldn't.
Well, I thought you can make the bold prediction either way. You can make it as, you know, she's not going to win anything. But no, I've had a good overthink about that for the last few hours. So that was a good use of my afternoon. I've gone with win a Grand Tour.
I can see the reason that I thought that end of the spectrum of success was more likely than Anna van der Breggen is I didn't think that she would come back unless she thought she was capable of being not necessarily as good as she was, because I mean it would be very difficult, I think, in the state of women's cycling now, which has grown so much stronger since she semi-retired, but at least to be a contender in the races that matter, the biggest races. So I did think if it's going to go one way, it's got to go that way. But a Grand Tour,
it's bold.
It is bold.
Which was the brief.
That was the brief.
It's tricky because also we know how much the sport has changed in those last 3 or 4 years. I've lost track of the years now. But people, you know, various other riders always comment how much the standards is improving across the board. So much more professionalism. So many more riders with salaries that make sure they can train and race full time. It's miles away from what it was still just a few years ago. But for Anna van der Breggen, she's been still really ingrained in the sport in that time. She's been in the team car, she's been at the races. And yeah, I agree with you. I think she wouldn't have decided to try and make the comeback if she didn't think she was already going to be very competitive. So yeah, we'll have a Grand Tour win, please.
Yes, she'll know the power numbers of all those SD Works riders and what they can achieve. Denny, what are you saying about that one?
I think it's Possible. Yeah, she certainly knows her power numbers. Dami Vollering revealed off season, of course, she revoked Anna van der Breggen's Training Peaks access to Dami Vollering's Training Peaks files after the Tour de France fam. Didn't want her to know any of her secrets anymore.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yeah, she's obviously had been on the inside of that data. And so I wouldn't put it past her. I think that would be a tougher ask in a race like the Tour de France fam, where you've maybe even got somebody like Lotte Kopecky, her own teammate, wanting to win. But I could definitely see that. It would be interesting to, we don't know yet which races she's targeting, do we? So yeah, I agree. That's a possibility.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because that kind of leads on to my prediction, which was that I thought Demi Vollering would win two Grand Tours this year. Most likely, probably, if I had to say which ones, I would say the Vuelta and the Tour, just because the Giro is only 2 weeks ahead. I really wanted to be bold and say someone was going to go for the Giro Tour double, but I just thought it was just too bold. But I seeing Vollering as being the great, I mean, she's going to want it so much, having been denied the Tour de France this year. I think she'll go to the Vuelta in a similar style. Last year, should I say? I think she'll go to the Vuelta in a similar way as she did last year, where she kind of goes and is sort of imperious, but it's all a bit of a warm-up exercise. I think she'll probably skip off the Giro to be in better shape for the Tour, because she is going to really want that with her new team. We, you know, putting aside the kind of uneasy relationship she might have had at SD Works, and actually has come, they're actually, Vollering and Kopecky have come out and actually said that they, you know, didn't talk to each other off the bike. And, you know, it was actually, as much as we all seemed like we were speculating that there was some kind of bitchiness behind the scenes, there was actually a little, you know, there was actually some truth to that. So I was saying, I think Vollering is definitely going to win. Oh, I'm saying definitely now. I don't know where that came from. I didn't mean to say definitely. Vollering is going to win two Grand Tours. So then that would mean Anna van der Breggen would have to take the Giro for that to all be true, which actually wouldn't be unreasonable. But yes, what do you think? Demi Vollering to take two?
I think that's...
Is that bold or is it too possible?
I was going to say, I think that's fairly safe in a way.
Yes,
I mean, she won the Tour of Spain last year, Vuelta, and she was odds on favourite to win the Tour de France, but she only didn't because of the whole stage 5 crash incident. And kind of the lack of support from her team, or at least she might argue now. So
we've got
a
lot of GC. I'm trying to make mine seem more bold. I'm desperately trying to.
But this is a very different year, isn't it? And so she's got a lot more contenders now. Anna van der Breggen, obviously, as you've just said, Joe. Pauline Ferrand-Prevot has said she's coming back to win the Tour de France. Although I did notice recently she's kind of downplayed that goal and said her aim is now to win it in the first 3 years, and this year would be more of a learning year. So I guess she's either just keeping expectations low, or she doesn't really think she's got what it takes to win this year. But I think you'd expect her to be up there or thereabouts, wouldn't you? And then of course you've got Nivea Doma, who wants to be a three-time winner. Like she said, she wants to win it back-to-back three years in a row. And I guess a set of riders still, you know, coming up, like Evita Musique, Vollering's own teammate, Paulina Rojakers, who had such a good tour last year. So, yeah, I think the Tour de France will be a much taller ask for her this year. Actually, my prediction, Rose,
one
of my other predictions was that she wouldn't win a Grand Tour. Dami Vollering win a Grand Tour this year.
Oh, well, I think that's certainly more bold. But is it more stupid?
That's certainly. I felt like I had to have a kind of more out there prediction, and I think that was mine. That she would. I mean, I don't wish bad luck on any rider, but there's a huge amount of pressure on Dami Vollering this year.
I know, but I think
a new environment, and new teammates to kind of contend with who have their own aspirations, and it could be a complicated year, and it might not run as well as she hopes. You know, I think, yes, if she's on the form she was last year, she could win two Grand Tours, but everything has to go right, and things could easily go wrong.
Well, I mean, well, there you go. Maybe that's another prediction to be made that, you know, Demi Rolling will be embroiled in more, you know, spats among her teammates, perhaps. But I know that, you know, Rebecca Charlton likes to send us little updates from the Demi Vollering's Instagram, you know, and she always says, like, you know, it's like you're trying to show your ex what a fantastic time you're having with your new partner. Because, you know, in all the pictures of her with FDJ, they're always smiling, laughing, and seem like a very cohesive kind of group. And, you know, I would say, you know, like you said, Denny, you know, how much was that kind of uneasiness in the team? How much did that actually stop her from winning the Tour de France? You know, they were kind of going for Blanca Vass for the stage win, and they kind of left her in the yellow jersey on the side of the road, didn't they? And, you know, going to FDJ, not only a team where she, you know, won't have that kind of potential nastiness already there, but the kind of fewer conflicting priorities there as well, I think. I think they're a much more streamlined team in terms of they're going to be going for the GC win. And then obviously they have Avita Musique and Juliette Labousse, but they're all climbing riders. They're not going to, they have like Ali Wollaston, a great sprinter, but I don't think it'll be the same level as SD Works, where they want to win every stage, whether it's punchy or a sprint or a climb or high mountains, low mountains. They will be a lot more streamlined in their focus. And that's why I think that I'm the other end of the spectrum. I think Demi Vollering is going to win more. Joe, what's your feel on that? Or do you think that that dynamic between Labousse and...
Anna van der Breggen's going to win the Vuelta.
Oh, yeah, so, of course. But with Labousse and Music, maybe Vollering might not necessarily be happy.
That's a trio that I'm really interested in, mainly because Vollering was so dominant last year when things went her way tactically, except for what a key moment for me was when Avita Musique beat her on a mountaintop finish in the Vuelta. And I remember thinking, wow, this is huge, because she just ridden everybody else off her wheel at almost any other opportunity. And then suddenly somebody had stayed with her all the way to the top and out-sprinted her. And I thought, wow, this is going to be a really exciting rivalry. Avita Musique didn't quite continue to challenge her in the same way, but that was quite a key moment for me. Now they're teammates, and this can go one of two ways now. You're either going to get on brilliantly and have a super climbing team with the two of them plus Juliette Labousse, or it could be very tricky. Of course, two of them are French riders. It's a French team. I want it all to work out well for the good of the sport. But I'm already thinking it is tricky when you've got big personalities, big names. And SD Works did have the biggest personalities and the biggest names. I think it's a slightly different situation now. But very intrigued how that will unfold. I think physically, the capability of Vollering to win two Grand Tours this year is completely, I'd say, a safe bet. But it's the question of how the team are going to work together, how they're going to gel, how they target different races, how they manage different expectations. Very intriguing, very exciting.
Well, Joe has simultaneously said that, Denny, you could be right and I could be right. Very magnanimous of you, Joe, I think. Go on, Joe, give us another one of your predictions.
So another rider I'm really looking at, slightly more of an unknown rider, Monica Trinka-Colonel. So she was on Be Pink last year, and she really stood out to me at the Vuelta. I was out at the Vuelta. That was one of my highlights of the year last year, to actually be on site there commentating. And a number of times she was up there in the leading group. Never quite got the win, but was up there, you know, on a number of occasions, climbing really well. And that was her first season back in the pro peloton, having not raced since, I think, she was a junior. So she's 25 now. She had a few years out, but she's with Livalula Jaco this year, and I'm really excited how her season's going to look. So I'm going to say a Grand Tour stage win for her in her second year back in the pro peloton. There you go.
That is bold. I think even if she's listening, she'll slightly wince from, you know, the great Joe Rouncewell saying that. Because that's quite a big ask. But then, you know, if you are a relatively unknown rider, we have seen it quite a lot before, that actually is a very good opportunity at a Grand Tour to get a stage win, because, you know, a lot of the time the GC rivals are looking at each other, or the, you know, the main rivals for a certain stage are more concerned about making sure that they're closest rival doesn't win than they are about maybe winning themselves. Or, you know, then you can't watch absolutely everybody. Like we saw it back at the Tour de France FAM in 2023, I think it was, when we saw the likes of Yara Kastelein take a stage win. You know, she was relatively unknown, untested as a road racer. Ricarda Bauernfeind also kind of made her kind of big announcement there as well. So it is a place where it is in some ways more possible to get a win there than it would be in kind of one of the major classics, for sure.
Yeah, the Grand Tours do offer those opportunities. There's always one or two stages, isn't there, where a breakaway will be allowed to go, or an unexpected rider will make their mark. Of course, they will have more of a target on their back now that a double Olympic champion has said they're going to win a stage of a Grand Tour. But I think that's a great shout. I mean, looking at her results now, I mean, she's a rider who, you know, got some really consistent results in the Grand Tours last year. And obviously, as you say, Joe, just, on a bigger team now, just coming back to riding. So, yeah, I think that's a brilliantly bold prediction.
Brilliantly bold. I like that.
Got the brief there with the bold prediction.
Yes. Perfect balance.
You're perfect. Well, my next, a little bit, we've actually touched on it before, and it is slightly, I'm cheating a bit, but I was going to say that Chloe Dygert to win Paris-Roubaix on her debut. She's never done Paris-Roubaix before. I don't even know if she's doing it this year. So my bold prediction
could just
might
leave
go
it for any year, couldn't you?
I could.
It doesn't have to be this year.
I know, I guess I could. But let's say this year. Let's say she is doing her first one this year. I think she looks, I know, I am aware that she is keen to ride the race, so it's not totally out of the realm of possibility that she'll even start there. So that's one positive for that. But a little bit, you know, I'm kind of cheating because it was slightly tainted, I guess, by having just watched the Tour Down Under and seen how strong she was in there, not just on that third stage that she won, but just all the way through that race. She was constantly coming back to the front group and then going clear on her own. She was kind of leading a whole peloton by herself numerous occasions, taking chunks of time out of, you know, lone breakaways ahead. So I can see that she's really, really strong. She's obviously, it does feel like she has been, like we said earlier, you know, she hasn't quite reached her, could it be that she hasn't even reached her potential yet? This, you know, Olympic and world champion might still not have really fully seen what she's actually capable of. But I think, you know, she would be a great choice for Canyon SRAM to put in the team. Huge engine. You know, she has done cobbles before. It's not like a totally mad shout. And, you know, Tom Bonin used to always say, the faster you go, the less it hurts. So, you know, we know that she's got a good engine on her. So, you know, surely she's got to be in for a shout with Paris-Roubaix.
I think that's a great shout. And she has said her big targets this year are later on.
Oh, no,
on in
Denny's
going to
announce.
No, they're later on in the year. So she wants to get the individual pursuit in the World Championships. It's now moved up to 4K.
Good knowledge. Well done.
Yeah. And the time trial World Championships. So, you know, they're later on in the year. So actually that early season could be a perfect chance for
her not
to
break a few bones
on
the pavé in April.
And she's got a great sprint too, so she's got all the ingredients, hasn't she, to be a Paris-Roubaix winner, you'd think.
Yes, and yeah, because she has that kind of, you know, that track nous as well, which is key for that velodrome finish. Joe, what are you saying about that one? Does that sound like have I reached the brief?
No,
there?
Not at all. I mean, I agree with what you said about she's not reached her full potential yet, which feels a really awful sentence to say about someone with that many rainbow jerseys and an Olympic gold medal and a silver and bronze, I think, to her name. So she's already had, obviously, a fantastic career, but she's had so many seasons marred by injury and illness, so many, you know, a few quite complex health problems and some extremely bad crashes, which have been very public. And I've always thought she's going to be head and shoulders above everybody else, but she's never quite had that season where she's been as dominant as I thought she might be. So maybe this is the year. Listening to her interview after her stage win at Tour Down Under, she was saying, you know, she said herself about how she was disappointed with 2024, and I thought, oh dear, I feel very inadequate now.
But, get back on your bike, Joe. Come on.
But no, I do agree with you that I'd say, despite everything, she probably hasn't reached her full potential yet, which is a positive and really exciting. And I think Paris-Roubaix is the perfect race for her to target with the sort of power that she can put out, the sort of power that she can sustain, the way she rides as well, the way she's not afraid to ride on the front and ride people off her wheel. And yeah, and like you mentioned, it finishes on a velodrome as well. So if, you know, if nothing else, if she comes down to a sprint finish, we know she's fast. We know she's used to riding on the track. So no, I'd agree with you. Bold claim, but not the boldest. I'm with you.
Could be bolder. Or I don't know. I don't know what we're going for
here.
I mean,
the Bay is like a bit of a...
Oh, it's a lottery,
such an unpredictable race. It's such a lottery. And we've seen wins, very different wins so far in the women's version, haven't we? But yeah, if anyone's going to do it, why not Chloe Dygert? She's such an enigma, isn't she? No one can really fully work her out. But yeah, for her to just pop up in Paris-Roubaix and ride everyone off her wheel, I wouldn't put it beyond her.
We got any quick fire predictions
well,
we want to throw
I,
out there?
I had a very...
Because you can't say later, we can't have episodes in coming months where you both say, I would have said that as my bold claim and I didn't say it.
Well, I predicted that Puk Peterson would win a stage of the Tour de France, fam, and she did for me. So I think she's going to win a major classic this year.
Oh, I think I mean,
she was there or thereabouts. She was often in the top 10 last year, but she says she's going to fully focus on what she's going to try and get into top form for Dvars d'Or Vlaanderen this year. And, Dvars d'Or Vlaanderen. She wants to be in top form from that race.
Oh, okay.
And she's going to add the Ardennes to. She stopped at the Tour of Flanders last year, so she's going to add the Ardennes in, which of course she won the Ardennes stage in the Tour de France,
yes.
The Ardennes Mega Mix, as you've coined it,
yes.
Rose. So yeah, I think she's going to get that big breakthrough major win. I don't know what race. Maybe, so I had to name one, maybe.
Yeah, go on, then you do.
Maybe Tour of Flanders or Amstel Gold Race.
Okay.
Can I say two?
Well, yeah, go on then. Yeah. We'll let you have that. Joe, any quick fire ones from...
I'm all out of bold predictions. That's me getting off the fence enough for the rest of January, I think.
Pop yourself back on the fence then enjoy the views.
I've got one more, of course.
Oh, yes.
Rose Manley to declare that Belgium is a cheese country.
That'll never happen. That is very bold and very unlikely.
There's a random
no
Belgian
way.
Cheese will win a World Cheese Award and you'll have to eat your cheese.
Every day you're going to be looking for obscure cheese awards though now, aren't you? Just to go for that. The other one I've written down, which is more with my heart than my head, is to see Marianne Vos win Milan San Remo. Because obviously, you know, she would have won before. Mm. Bit of few climbs at the end, needs a sprint finish. That's slightly more my heart talking, because I feel like that has got to be Lorena Vibus is going to be definitely, but you know, you never know that
Lotta
cycling.
Lotta Kopecky said she's looking at that race too.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Why have Vos has won, beaten Kopecky before, so...
No. But I'm just going to say, it's another one of those races where Howard SD Work is going to play it.
Yeah.
There's already two team leaders straight away. Yeah.
Almost immediately. So that was my... Yes, but I think that would be so beautiful. Milan San Remo comes back and Vos winning it would be, fantastic. I had actually written Vos to retire and then I looked up that she'd recently said, I'm not thinking about retire, I'm thinking about winning Milan San Remo. And I was like, cross that out, Vos to win Milan San Remo. So we'll see how we get on. Well, next month it's going to come up very thick and fast, actually, because we're going to have the UAE Tour will have already happened. Joe, you're commentating on, not flying out there,
no,
I presume.
No,
but...
from lovely sunny London. Yes. Not quite the Dubai heat.
Yes, not quite the same. But that's going to be in a few weeks' time already. And then it's really thick and fast after that. It's kind of unbelievable how quickly the races come after that. So I don't think any of our predictions can be tested for next month. So we get a little reprieve then, don't we? But yes, Joe, thank you very much for joining us
on
this.
Thank you for having me.
Episode. I'm looking forward to seeing how all of your predictions fare, and all the ones that you said when we weren't recording as well. More libelous ones. And Denny, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rose.
And thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.